Good morning, everybody. How many of you here in the room are still working directly with children? Okay, and how many, including Leon, can still conjure up memories of doing that? Okay, so I'm going to be talking today about tips for owning your own supervision in child youth and youth care, primarily direct service workers, but also right on up the ladder. And before I start formally, I want to take a look at some of the context of things that child and youth care workers face, particularly direct service ones. So if you disagree with something, please raise your hand quite high. So what's child and youth care work about? We deal with challenging behaviors from children. We can't always see our successes short term. Sometimes we never see them, as they may happen years later. Last night at the dinner, I had the chance to spend some time with Janine Bolger, who I supervised some 23 years ago back in the United States. And we spent pretty much the entire time talking about my contact with kids she worked with back then. And I was watching a smile come on her face about some kids who she possibly felt weren't going to do so well, who through a vignette, she got to see the success of that work. But workers don't always see that and often can't see the success. We get cursed at more than in most jobs. No disagreement yet? We don't always feel the support we want from other agencies or funding sources. The work raises all sorts of emotions and feelings in us. The hours are often unpredictable and crazy. The community often doesn't appreciate our work and sees us as babysitters. And then to top it all off, if this weren't enough, the pay is low. So what can be helpful to child and youth care workers primarily? Support from the supervisors. They're the people most likely to be able to give that support. But does that always happen? No. How many in the room have asked the question, if I could just supervise my supervisor, I would? Well, we did an article probably about 12, 13 years ago, and it's available, I believe, on CYCNet, which dealt with that. And these are actually some common themes. What we would do is whenever we taught a workshop of this title, we would ask people if they could actually answer the question. And we collect them and collate them over time. And some of the themes, and I won't read them all, that came up when child and youth care workers were asked if I could supervise my supervisor, demand they prepare for supervision. And far too often, I think supervision becomes that people come in and just say, how's it going? And then it goes from there. I'm going to give an example later of an agenda model we suggest that a child and youth care worker can use to help own some of that. Tell them to guide, not judge. And the one I love, of course, is empower my supervisor to take several trainings to be able to better supervise me. One of the things we were doing in my last agency before I left was we were including non-supervisors in a three-day supervisory training. And it was something that we wanted to do partly for staff development, but partly to empower them to see the other side of the world being a supervisor. And I can't tell you how many times people would come into that course and say things like, my gosh, the world looks different from here. But it also began that process of training people before they'd gotten to the role of being so important to the child and youth care workers. And again, I won't read them all, but I think it's speaking to boundaries, suggest they be more professional rather than being a buddy, point out negative attitudes contagious. And then, of course, I love the last one, give them a raise for putting up with me. And I think that part of the child and youth care worker owning their own supervision has to be understanding they present challenges also and accepting that. So what is supervision? And we won't cover this. I actually, in terms of the 15 minutes, was very worried because back at a conference in Prince Edward Island, I once put this up for 6 hours and we talked about it with nothing else added to it. And the real key here as you look at it is supervision is incredibly complex. So when you look at that relationship, and I'm just going to read it very quickly, supervision is a professional relationship that provides support, education, monitoring of quality, and creates a safe forum to reflect on professional practice. It should encourage constructive confrontation and critical thinking that informs and improves the practice of all parties. Respecting the inherent hierarchy in the relationship, it should accept the ethical responsibility to use power in a thoughtful manner. And the dynamics of the supervisory relationship can create a parallel process in all of the relationships, including that of the client worker. And then ultimately, supervision should be the vehicle to create dynamic growth, establish high professional standards, and enhance quality and culturally competent services. And the way we structured that was, we believe if you do the first four, the fifth will happen. And you'll begin to get into the real core of supervision, which ultimately is to improve those services for people. And if that's going to happen, it's going to have to come through the worker feeling supported. Another couple of things there that I think are important to point out when we chose the wording of it, and this also was in an article that was in the Child and Youth Care Relational Journal. We chose to use the word encourage constructive confrontation, not allow it. And again, this is coming from the supervisor's look. And we chose to use the word, create a safe forum to reflect on practice, which really, when you break it down, should be what supervision's about. And how we've used this back home, and how I suggest to people using it, is the supervisee would take this to the supervisor and maybe make some modifications from this if they felt it fit, and begin to go through all the categories, almost in bullet points, and take a look together at how much of this is actually happening and at what quality. Because it almost can create a contract between the two parties as to what are people getting versus what do they need to get to move forward. And if that wasn't complicated enough in going through supervision, there's power involved. And when you talk to child and youth care workers sometimes, and I do many, many trainings with them, when you open that door to talk about power, the floodgates open in many ways. And I think, again, this is geared as a kind of two-way workshop. When I teach the full workshop, hopefully supervisor, supervisee would attend together coming in. But if you look at some of the power, I mean, some is clear, like assigned authority and administrative power, but there's a power to impact self-esteem. There's a power to impact image. And I think for child and youth care workers, they begin to strategize to own their supervision. It's important they digest it, but also the supervisor take a look at what kind of power they really have on a person's life. And again, this power trickles down the organizational ladder and up the organizational ladder as this relationship develops. So what can child and youth care workers do? Well, they can play games. Now, the concept of games, this was an article we did not too long ago, and it went back to some old traditional articles on games that were in the social work field. Games people play in supervision. And part of the concept of games is there's health in every game to a certain point. And then it becomes a game when the power in the relationship is not balanced. So again, not covering all of these, but taking a look, the easy button game. What the worker does there is that they're struggling with something. They kind of want to make it better, but they don't really. And they know their supervisor is somebody who's pretty much a perfectionist. So they keep bringing it to the supervisor until they hit the easy button. And the supervisor ultimately says, I'll do it myself, or it gives it to somebody else. Again, the health, they bring things to a supervisor they're unsure. The game, they lose their responsibility or push it off. Shopping for answers is pretty obvious, that the worker goes to different people to get answers. I often point out to child and youth care workers in many organizations, the death of your career, as you begin to go around your supervisor to somebody else to get an answer. The benefit, they're looking for more advice from people. And again, without going through them all, I think it's important to look at them before we get to more constructive approaches. Because again, this is what happens when people don't feel they can communicate back and forth and own their own supervision. They slide into games. And games, I think we can all agree, are destructive. So what are some healthy ways that you can own your own supervision? Accept it's normal for each person's needs and styles to be different, and try to mesh them when possible. I think, again, for the worker to begin to see that encouraging constructive confrontation in both ways, in both directions, is not something that's negative, but something that just is normal between two people. Function on mutual expectations, I mentioned before, contracting the relationship, and I do believe, again, the child and youth care worker should own some of that. Another thing I suggest, I teach a course in a social work program back home, and it's a seminar, and I suggest the students bring in a blank evaluation in the very first supervision session, give it to the supervisor and say, can we talk about how I'll be graded on these? Can we talk about standards? Again, another example of contracting, but also owning. Keep the supervisor informed. So again, helping workers see that their supervisor is responsible for their work. In an organizational setting or organizational structure, and letting the supervisor know things so they're not surprised by it. It's also going to help build the relationship between the two. Selectively using supervisors' time and resources. Not that a worker doesn't use it, but they don't overuse it. And then I think really the key to owning your own supervision is working on your side of the relationship based on honesty and dependability. Many times people say, and workers say, I don't like this, I'm being micromanaged. Well, one of the ways to avoid being micromanaged is to convince your supervisor that you don't need to be micromanaged. And so again, what I've done many times with workers is suggest they go in and actually put that on a supervision agenda. How can I gain your trust more? How can I be able to work more openly on my own? One of the things we talked about just before was the idea of confrontation. And you can tell by some of the definitions, we've been trying to work on not definitions based on data, but definitions that are based on kind of a working model that people can use together and go back and forth with to begin to reframe some things. Because when we did some of the background check on the article we wrote on confrontation, one of the things we were laughing at was some of the definitions that are out there. Warlike intervention, hostile encounter. And so if a supervisee sees the idea that they should confront their supervisor, well, you don't want to go to your supervisor at a hostile encounter or a warlike atmosphere. So we attempted to shift the thinking a bit with this definition. And again, you can read it, but the key parts there, and this was meant originally for supervisors confronting supervisees, but keeping in the thinking that this is a two-way relationship that needs to be fluid going back and forth, we've also taught it for supervisees, how do you confront upward to your supervisor. Not in there, but what should be key is you help people confront about a standard being met or not being met and not the personality of the person. Secondly, again, you create a forum that the supervisee feels more comfortable not changing the supervisor's opinion, not changing the behavior. Create a forum to discuss it. And how do you do that? Well, where we've trained this often, we often get mocked walking around when people see us and say, help me understand, help me understand. Jessica knows that from being in Winnipeg a couple of times. But teaching people when they confront to open it up would help me understand. Help me understand why not. Help me understand what this is about. And again, empowering the worker to be able to own some of this and not just sit back and complain to peers, but begin to challenge it in a way that's much more hopefully comfortable for both parties in the relationship. Two magic questions. What information do I have that they don't that will help them see it my way? And what information do they have that I don't that will help me see it their way? I think actually it's a typo. I put them both together. It should be what information do I have that they don't that will help them see it my way? And again, getting into that sense of before you conclude something, raise the help me understand question. This is the agenda model I talked about, and it's something that a number of agencies have adopted. It's not been a long enough time to do any real follow-up with it, but the reports back have been extremely positive, where the two parties contract for a relationship that's essentially one-third, one-third, one-third. So if you take an hour a session, one-third of the agenda is the responsibility of the supervisee in a way to get them to own it, one-third supervisor. And again, going back to our definition, respecting the inherent hierarchy, supervisor retains discretion for the third. Now, how does that work? Well, it allows the supervisee to own part of their learning clearly and in a structure, but also what the supervisor can work toward is the supervisee trying to get into that final third and begin to say, there's more I want, there's more I need, there's more I want to talk about coming in. And again, we suggest the supervisee give it in one day in advance to look and drive the final third, and that they're looking to drive the final third. One day in advance allows the supervisor to prepare, and supervisors may be much more willing to engage in this process if they don't feel like they'll be surprised with something. But it also, again, creates a structure for the worker to own that process at least one-third of the way and hopefully more. And here's just something I put together that could be a sample agenda, and it could have been anything back and forth, but you can see it could be an administrative thing like the vacation request rather than doing it when passing by, talking about frustrations, ways to give me more impact. And I think part of what the supervisor can then work on with the supervisee is how, in fact, they can begin to frame these in ways that become, again, more beneficial to them going through it. So closing up, what are some of the tips to own your own supervision for a supervisee or a child and youth care worker? Ask, 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 and then ask some more. And I always say, we probably have all said it to people along the way, whether it's in a classroom or in an agency, there's no such thing as a dumb question. I think particularly in child and youth care, we face enough things that are so unusual, and really helping people to see asking is a positive, not a negative. One of the things I would do with supervisees who are anxious and think they're asking too much, I would tell them up front, I'll tell you when you're asking too much. In the meantime, keep asking. Viewed as a way to grow personally and professionally, and I think this is a saying I just love, with the privilege of professional judgment comes the responsibility of reflective practice, and for the supervisee to really begin to digest that. And I think, you know, we talked before about the difficulties of child and youth care work, but it's really noble work when you think about it. And helping supervisees see that they have a responsibility to reflect beyond just what they're supposed to do. And the third one, I think, is not, you have to be careful with this, it's not meaning to break down the hierarchy. When I say supervision in quotes, it means kind of redefining it. Because I've seen plenty of people say, well, my supervisor doesn't know this, or they're not really fully versed in that. Well, helping the workers see that maybe they can get that somewhere else, aside from just saying my supervisor doesn't know it. And again, that dialogue can come from the supervisor saying, if I'm not able to provide something, I'm comfortable with you going somewhere else, I can suggest something. And again, some of these we just covered, the one-third, one-third, participating in group supervision, politely insisting on a timely evaluation, using an option to respond. I think very often in agencies, as we know, people get behind in evaluations, and helping the worker see that they deserve it and they really should be pushing for it. Insisting on regular supervision sessions. Some agencies are much better than others. I know in New York, it's a big struggle of ours to get people who are supervising 8, 10 child and youth care workers to have regular sessions. But the workers should be demanding it. It's part of what they deserve. Training, take all you can, be seen as one who will. And then just to close up, the teaching diagnosis essentially goes back to something way back in my career that I learned about. If you look at baseball and some sports, in baseball, most times the best batting coaches were awful hitters. They just could know how to hit, they couldn't hit. And many times the best hitters were awful batting coaches. They just did it. And many times people who get to be a supervisor can do the work, they can't explain it. Worker taking a chance to take a look, how can I learn best from this person and find how I can learn from them. And then of course the last three just flow hopefully into the bottom one, which is it's a relationship. And helping the worker see that this is something that goes back and forth. And of course, being empathic with their supervisor's issues, they may be there one day. And having them see their supervisor as a person who also has pressures. So thank you very much. Any questions, thoughts? Yeah?
I'm interested in supervision within the life space, because certainly for our first-tier supervisors, we spend 8 hours a day with the people they're supervising. And there's a supervision event, you know, the third, the third, the third, but there's also the supervision process that's happening outside the formal meeting as well. And it's how to grab the power of that, because that mentoring and coaching that goes on is as powerful as what's happening within the meeting. Any thoughts on that?
Excellent. So the question was, what about supervision in the life space, where there may be so many powerful things in the moment that can be seized upon to do supervision, if that's the right word, and how do you do that? I think I've got a saying I use a lot with direct service supervisors, is you have to figure a way to be close enough to really know what's going on, but far enough away to lead. And how can the supervisor, when seeing something, decide, do I need to deal with it now? Was it unsafe? Can I push it off to my supervisory session, or am I going to wait for a break in the action and pull the person aside? I also suggest strongly to supervisors, particularly in the life space, to go to that help me understand method. Instead of saying to the worker, I saw you do that, and with that tone, as you come in, I saw you do it, help me understand what you're doing. Help me understand what was there, and try to make that as unthreatening as possible, because I think what we've learned and seen in our careers about that kind of supervisory practice is the worker could often get turned off if they feel they've been embarrassed or they've been, you know, put aside by the supervisor. So I think the carefulness of it and help me understand is giantly important. Other questions? Yeah.
One of your pages was about the power relationship, but of course there are the other models like using external consultants or somebody senior who's not in line management, or using groups or pairs or whatever, and the power can be sidestepped in that way, which can allow freer discussion sometimes.
Yeah, the question was that sometimes power can be sidestepped in types of situations where there are external consultants. And it's interesting because I was in Prague last April, and I did a presentation at the SOS conference on power in the supervisory relationship. And as I began, I was watching a blank room and finally said, could we talk about why I'm talking and nobody seems to be understanding about power in this relationship? And they said, well, no, we don't really have supervision. We have a boss. And then we have help from outside. It wasn't just SOS people. It was other people. And they were talking about exactly that concept, that they saw it as two ways, that they got a lot of the practice help outside. I think that it does sidestep the power, but I think there's got to be a connection between the outside consultant and the supervisor, some sense they're buying into the organizational hierarchy, and then, of course, some sense of safety for the worker. I think ultimately that model can work even better. But if it does start to break down the it's got safety of somebody objective, it's got the negative of shopping for answers and then coming back and saying something different. Any others? Okay, thank you.